Session number 10413, reel 15.
Mr. George Self, Reel 15. You were telling me how you were investigating this old former German headquarters.
Mm-hmm. And we came to the canteen, the men's canteen. And it was well stocked. Wasn't stocked for long, though. We helped ourselves. And as I say, it had been... the headquarters, because there was uniforms, officers' uniforms, left in the bedrooms. And then we were recalled back to our company. We allowed the three civilians downstairs out. The section that had gone into the other room, the other building, it was the men's sleeping quarters. And there was a full set of band instruments in this place. And so we rejoined the company and carried on. And again, there was nothing. We never met up with any...
This is June 7th?
Mm-hmm. And around about dinner time... we saw, I was leading my platoon with Corporal Chichester, one of the Welshmen. And this old farmer came running down the road shouting, "Bosh, Bosh." And his farm was about 150 yards off us. And you could look straight into the stockyard. And we saw these Germans running away through this stockyard. So I took the leading section and we run up the road and surrounded this farmhouse. And me and Chichester went through the farm gates and broke into the house and searched it, and there was nobody there. And we were searching the outbuildings, and we came across the stable door being locked and bolted from the outside. And when we opened it, there's four British prisoners in it, out of, lo and behold, Brigade HQ. How they'd got in front of us, we don't know yet. And so we took off after these Germans, and we came to a road, and... when we got on the road, we couldn't see anything of them. But after a couple of minutes, the brigadier walked up. That's what we were doing.
That's senior, is it?
Mm-hmm. And we told him we'd seen 20 Germans run up this hedgerow, and we'd come to see if we could capture them. And he said, "Too late, sonny, we've already got them." And so they must have been in Battalion HQ. And we just carried on. It came to nightfall, we dug in. Then the next day, we were told we were going in to relieve the 7th Armoured Div. It had got itself into... trouble, and we had to go in and get it out of trouble, and that we were going in on the back of tanks. The Canadian tank regiment was going to take us in, and so we climbed on the back of these tanks, and the sergeant charge of the tank was said to me, tell the lads to watch for snipers, because we lost three blokes in here yesterday. And so we advanced on the back of these tanks. And those clods of earth flying up. And there were 88 landing among us. We couldn't even hear the explosion. So we wouldn't have known if there was any snipers till we dropped. We couldn't have heard a shot. And we went in so far on these tanks, then we got off them and found that we were going to make an attack on the village of St. Pierre. And B Company, and I think it was D Company, were going to do the initial attack, and A and C Company was going to follow up. And the attack went in, and we followed up, and we came under, my company anyhow, came under mortar fire. We had quite a few casualties, including my friend, Corporal Chichester. And I carried him down to a house and placed him in a house which later became the first aid post. And we took up our positions, dug in, and I sent two men out to go and see this church tower, see if they could get in and see if there was anybody up high, because there was a sniper firing at us. And one of my corporals grabbed a Bren gun and went out, climbed a tree with his Bren gun and looking for snipers. And we had a ding-dong battle for 4 days.
What do you remember about it? Any character?
Chaos. Because the Germans was coming each way and every way. So you were looking, you were firing one way 1 minute and firing another way another minute. And as I say, it was chaotic.
What sort of defensive positions did you establish?
We dug in. And the anti-tanks had come up. But you know, you only got one anti-tank to accompany. And I think it was on the third day that things quieted down for a little bit, and we were withdrawn from the position we were in, and put into this copse where we dug in. And the next morning, the cherry pickers came along with the tanks, the Valentines, and came in this field in front of us, and there was three of them put out of action in a crack. We couldn't see any infantry. It was long-range stuff, 88s, mortars. And there was a slit trench about 10 yards in front of me. And during the lull, I could hear somebody moaning. And I went out to this slit trench, and there was an officer lying in the bottom. So I jumped in, and it was Major Clapton out of B Company, the company we relieved. How long he'd been lying there, he'd laid there all night that I know of, and well into the morning. And I got the stretcher bearers and we lifted him out and took him away. And unfortunately, he He died of his wounds because he'd been lying too long, probably. Anyhow, on the afternoon, we received orders that we would be withdrawn, which upset a lot of people, because by then we'd lost, I would think, about 300 men. And we withdrew onto, I think it was this high ground, I think it was some point 103 or 130 or something. While we were resting there, before we moved on, the second in command of my company, I forget what they call it now, we'd all just been taught never to assemble near a T-junction, because Jerry used to range on to T-junctions and take his range from. And unfortunately, these two officers had stood up standing talking at this T-junction, and bang, and there was nothing left. So we came out of there eventually, and I think we only had about one day's rest when we went in again to try Tilly. Unfortunately, we didn't get in.
What do you remember about that attack?
Well, again, my company was in reserve, and all I know about it is that the two leading companies were pinned down. We tried to get to them, and we were heavily mortared with these morning minis, and we lost quite a few people. I know B Company lost the Sergeant Major, and even in HQ there was casualties in HQ. I think the CO was one of them. And we were withdrawn out of there again, and one of the Scottish regiments came through us there to take our position out of the 51st Island Div. And we came back into a quiet sector, dug in, and we were, maybe it was about 2 mile, 3 mile maybe, from the Tilly Cecil's village Bocage Road. And my platoon was picked to go out on a 48 hours standing patrol on this road. And I had a platoon commander who was a school teacher. And once again, he was a man that I hadn't much time for. But we went out on this patrol for 48 hours. And at night time, we used to take a standing patrol out across the road, going to no man's land with this fighting patrol. And everything was calm. And on the second day, we had this barrage over to the left of us. There was a valley, a deep valley. And we had this barrage in this valley. And we went to see what it was. And there's a Scots regiment advancing along this valley behind a creeping barrage. And at night time, we were relieved, and we had to come back onto this sunken road, car track, travel to D Company, and go through D Company lines. And I was at the back of the platoon with the Piat, 2-inch mortar. I came to D Company lines, this lieutenant was going straight on. So I stopped platoon HQ and tell them to go through the lines. And I run after this lieutenant and said he'd gone past where we had to turn off. Nothing of the kind. Not even there yet. So I said, you've passed it. I've been in and out again. D Company is back there. And I was told that I was wrong. So I said, well, fair enough. Go ahead. And I have walked back to D Company lines. And just before I got there, Spando opened. And there was such a bloody rush, everybody coming back to where I was. And we went through D Company lines. And when we got back to our lines, we had an inspection. The signaller had lost his wireless. He just dropped it and run. The Piat gun, the leading Piat gun, just dropped it and left it. All sorts of gear left in this sunken road. Everybody had run. So the company commander asked me what had happened, and I told him what had happened. The next morning I was sent for by the CO. That's what had happened, and I told him. And I was told to go to rear headquarters, get some sleep, get a bath, change of clothing, black myself off. I was going out on a recce patrol with two men to get this wireless and this back the following night. So off I went, and a lance corporal and a private came down. They were with me.
Did they volunteer, or would you? Did you?
They volunteered, and had a bath, got changed, had about 4 hours sleep, and somebody came to tell me that there was a lecture going on. There was a fighting patrol going out with me, and I had to liaise with them and see the plan of action. And when I went to meet this fighting patrol, it was a fighting patrol out of my own company, but it was led by this officer that had lost the gear.
What was his name?
I cannot think of his name now. And we were going out again, once again, we were going out D Company's line, turning right, going down this sunken road towards where this gear was. And on the left-hand side, there was a tank that had been knocked out. And when we got to this tank, my patrol had to go straight on down the sunken road. This officer had to turn half left, go down to the bottom of the field, go along the bottom edge row for two fields, turn in, and then come back in behind me. They were hoping we would have everything back. So we went out at night time, got to the tank, and I said to him, okay, you go that way, we'll go this way. And we just got to where the gear was. We were picking it up, actually, when a brain gun opened at us. So we had to dive out the road.
A brain?
A brain gun. And it was this patrol. We had no weapons because we wanted our hands for kindness stuff. So we couldn't fire back. And they were calling all the German bastards who could lie their tongue to and what they were going to do with us and that. And the Lance Corporal was lying. And I could see something sticking out of his eye. And I crawled up to him because he wasn't moving. And when I got up to him, he'd been shot in here. And it was the blood that was spouting out of his eye, I could see. And I was shouting to the, and the sergeant that was with him called him York. Ford, that's it. I was shouting to this Ford, top of my voice. And this went on for 10 minutes. And I had a hand grenade with us. And so I said, well, there's only one way to stop this. And I pulled the hand grenade out. And I pulled the pin. And I was just going to throw it when this officer jumped through the hedgerow. And he realised where he was, because the gear was lying at his feet. So I got up and I went to him. I said, I've got a 36 hand grenade here. The pin's gone. I've thrown it away. I've a good mind to put it down your blouse front. And I throw it away. And we just left the gear. Carried this Lance Corporal back into D Company lines. And I called him everything I could lie my tongue to. And I think if I'd had a rifle, I would have shot him. No doubt about it, I was that bloody mad. I would have shot him. And when I got back into D Company lines, I was still calling him, and Major English met us and told me to put in my lip. And he had the stretcher bearers with him. And they examined this Lance Corporal, and he'd been riddled across the air. Shot in the face. And he's dead. When they said to me, he's dead. Well, I lost my top again. And I got marched out of the way. When we got back to the company lines, I was still ranting on about this officer, what I would do to him. The first time he ever got in front of me, I would shoot the bugger. And the company commander came and said, what's the matter? And I told him, right, go to Battalion HQ. And I went to Battalion HQ and marched in front of the CO. What had happened, and lost my head, and I told him, and I was sent back to Rear HQ, and this officer was sent for. The next morning when I came back, this officer had gone, been posted.
What was wrong with the officer? Was it just he chronically incompetent at
He was incompetent, and he had his own way. Nobody used to go by the book. But the book was the best guidelines you had. And he wouldn't take any guidelines. He had to go his way or no way. And eventually, we found out that when they'd gone through this hole in the hedge, which was at the bottom, instead of going, it was about 10 yards from the bottom hedge row where they were going to go through this hedge. Instead of turning left, it turned right. And so they'd come up to the hedge row where we were behind gathering this gear. No, naturally, they took us to be Jerry's. Fortunately, they only killed the one. They could have killed the three of us. And I was quieting down by then, and especially when I came back and he disappeared. Where he'd gone, I don't know. Never heard of him anymore after that.
It sounds like it was a very difficult country to fight in anyway.
It was after the desert. you know, open spaces, and then you would fight hedgerow to hedgerow. And you could get bogged down quite easily. And from there, we just sorted about Tilly Sassoon's or Villiers Bocage for a long time. Seemed a long time, anyhow. Just and eventually the breakthrough came.
Before we go on, I just wanted to ask you really what the what conditions were like, you know, during that period. Did you actually establish defensive lines, or was it just slit trenches?
Just slit trenches.
So there were no connected lines?
Oh, no. They went out with the First World War. The last time I had anything to do with them was in Nicosia when we built them for a defensive position.
But so it was just interconnected, non-connected?
No. The only time it was connected was if you were just in a dike buck, you know, and built yourself in where
how
you...
How did you cite the positions? Because in the Bocage country, it's very difficult to get a field of fire, mm-hmm. as I understand. How did you sort out that problem?
Well, all you could get was a small... You know, you get what we would call a paddock.
You wouldn't clear a field of fire then, or try attempt to?
Oh, no. Because, you know, everything was fenced in with these bushes. So all you could see was from this bush to that bush, or that bush and that bush. You know, that's the only field of fire you had.
What about, did you use any other, did you have mines or barbed mm-hmm. wire?
No.
Positions.
You were never there long enough, Peter.
Even in this Tilly area?
No.
What
because you were moving about that much.
Sideways, you mean? Or backwards and forwards? Or?
Well, backwards and forwards sometimes. Sometimes you would be pulled out of there and shoved in there. You know, if you were coming out for a rest, they would bring fresh troops into where you were. And they would shove you further along the line where it was a bit quieter, where you got a rest.
What kind of, while you were in the line, what kind of daily routine would you have when you were there?
Well, when you were in the line, you were in the line. There was no, the only routine you had was half an hour before dawn, you stood to. And you stood down half an hour after dawn. That was the most dangerous time. Then you went about cleaning your weapons, making sure you had ammunition, and the rest of the day, and you got a hot meal at night.
I wanted to ask that. Food, how was the food?
Well, you always carried emergency rations with you.
What were they?
A packet of biscuits, tin of bully, and you always had this tin of chocolate, this vitamin stuff. You always had that.
Would you eat that, or was that just...
No, we always carried that. That was for an emergency.
So what would you actually eat in this typical day? Just the one meal?
Bully beef, and you had tack biscuits, and you got one meal. Bully beef stew.
But that was hot when it came...
Oh, yes, aye. Hot tea.
How was it brought up?
It was brought up in boxes. Insulated boxes. It was cooked down the Bay of Shillong. It was brought as far as it could by wagon, and then you had to manhandle it.
How far would you have to manhandle it? About?
Well, it just depends how far your wagon could get up. Sometimes it was just a couple hundred yards, sometimes it was a mile.
And it was still, although it was hot, it wasn't anything much more than bully beef.
So it was tatties, meat, vegetables.
What about latrines? What did you do for that?
Well, you had to dig your own and cover it up when you left it.
Was it individual ones, or would you have one for a group of you?
If you're going to be in a place any length of time, you would dig one for a group. But if you were going into attack, you just did it and covered it over with a shovel, and it was individual ones.
Did you carry your own paper, or?
Well,
or would you just
bit grass out, anything.